WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me.
I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
It is another Monday Night Talk. My name is Kevin Tachi. Thank you for keeping your radio dial set right there, too. 95.9 FM and also 1460 AM WATD. A great show lined up for you. Starting off after we check in on the roadways, we have a state rep, Joan Moschino. She's here. She'll chat with me in just a half a second. She's sitting right in front of me. So she's ready to go. Looking forward to the conversation with the state rep. And then we have Dr. Shields from the Signature Healthcare Brockton Hospital. And we're going to talk a little bit about their Green Cancer Center and some of the things that they do. How great is it that instead of having to drive all the way to Boston, you are able, if you are, you get the news that you have cancer, that it isn't necessarily the trek into Boston. It's right here on the South Shore. And we're going to talk with Dr. Shields about that, as she is one of the oncology doctors on staff there. We're also going to get into sports. After the 7 o'clock, the 7 o'clock hour will be intense. We're going to speak with the former Major League Baseball executive. He is also the editor-in-chief of Baseball Digest, Rick Cerrone. No, not the catcher. Rick Cerrone was actually the GM. He had duties in the front office of the Pittsburgh Pirates and the New York Yankees. And we're going to chat with Rick about the Hall of Fame. And the four candidates that are going to be enshrined this summer. Talk about some of the folks who, well, they're on the cusp, or maybe they're not. You know, like the Roger Clemens and the Barry Bonds. Will they make it into the hall? We'll talk with Rick about that. And then, you know what's coming up at the end of the week? It's the Super Bowl. And usually it is a tradition for this radio program to bring in two of the very best that the South Shore has to offer when it comes to their prognostication on football. Who am I talking about? None other than Jerry Thornton of Barstool Sports, also author of two books, Five Rings and From Darkness to Dynasty, and the potentate of pigskin himself, Kerry J. Byrne from coldhardfootballfacts.com, as we will break down the New England Patriots and the L.A. Rams. Kind of an exciting show, huh, State Rep?
I think so. I'm pretty excited about the Pats being at the Super Bowl.
How are you? It's been a while since we've chatted.
Oh, I'm good. Thank you. It's really, I know I feel bad I haven't been in a while, but things are going well. The legislature, senators and reps, got sworn in on January 2nd. It was
exciting.
A beautiful ceremony. And we all got right to work on January 3rd. So filed all the bills, which is a lot, you know, it's a lot of work. But, you know, we were ready coming into the session with the bills that we're filing. And I think it was just under 5,000 bills got filed this year. So we're wading through them now. And this whole co-sponsor, you can sign on to other people's bills and show your support. So, of course, I read everything before I do. So for anybody listening out there, if you don't see me on something, don't worry about it. You know, still contact the office. Let us know what we should be reading and paying attention to. It just means it was more than I could read. So, yeah, so it's pretty exciting. And a lot of cool, interesting stuff's gotten filed. A lot of big topics this year. A lot of climate change stuff.
That's your wheelhouse.
That's my wheelhouse. And in fact, I filed one of the big climate change bills. this session, and we are, I just feel that it's important that we have a plan to reach our greenhouse gas reduction emission reductions, and we've set some big goals for 2050, and I feel like we should push it back onto the administration and require them to set a plan to have, you know, real accountability and transparency, and through that process, hopefully it'll be iterative to reach our greenhouse gas reduction emission goals, and it'll be exciting.
There you go. There's a little teaser from the state representative as she's going to be by. She'll be joining me for a nice segment coming up. But first, time for us to pull into the WATD Traffic Center. Being brought to you on this end by Brennan's Smoke Shop, online at brennansmokeshopma.com, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and now Pope's Island, New Bedford. Lisa DeMilo, how are things out on the highways and byways?
Well, Kevin, it's a slow ride on the expressway southbound. It's a grind, actually, from the tunnel down past South Bay. You'll get some running room, but you're right back in it after Bryant Ave down to the split. Northbound stop and go from Granite Ave up past Neponset Circle. From there, you're good all the way up towards the tunnel. Route 3 South is backed up coming off the expressway and down past Union Street. Northbound's in good shape. The Bourne and Sagamore bridges are delay-free, as are routes 24 and 44. This report is sponsored by the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. The Crohn's and Colitis Foundation invites you to take steps for cures at a walk event near you. Get started at cctakesteps.org. Traffic on the 9s every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeffrey from Brennan's Smoke Shop. I want to wish all of our very good customers and friends a happy, healthy, and safe new year. I'd also like to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your continued patronage of our small business here on the South Shore. Without the support from this most excellent community of people, our small business couldn't survive this highly regulated, highly taxed industry. From all of us at Brennan's Smoke Shop, thank you. In return for your patronage, it is our commitment to you to stand up and fight for your rights, freedoms, and liberties this year and every year. Infinity plus infinity plus infinity plus infinity. Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, and Pope's Island in New Bedford. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the very best smoke shop in Massachusetts. Customers must have a valid state or federal ID to enter the store.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back. Hey, and also just a quick note, you can always find the Monday Night Talk Facebook page. I believe it's the Monday Night Talk on 959FM, WATD. Also, you can find me on Twitter, Kevin Tachi. It's that easy, T-O-C-C-I. And as you get a little bit of a teaser prior to checking in with Lisa DeMilo, your state representative in the 3rd Plymouth District joining us, I think we should probably start our conversation with heck of a campaign and election season.
Yeah.
How much you like on November 6th and 7th?
Oh, yeah. I was very relieved. You know, we worked really hard. We had a lot of fun out there. But, you know, we duked out on the issues. And I was just so honored and excited to be reelected. And it was nice to get past that and to really get back to work on the constituent work and to get ready for the new session. Took a little time off over the holidays.
Good.
We ate, drank, and were merry. A little bit too much eating and drinking, but always a good thing to rest and rejuvenate before you start the new year. So
you get sworn in January 2nd, as you said. What's your process? Did your process change this time compared to the last time?
When you
get sworn in, I mean, is it a matter, you get a different mindset? Is it a matter of saying, it's probably like, again, you know, your first term, you sit and you go, and you learn through osmosis, you're going, right. Oh, and you get little, either a mental notebook, you're writing down, going, I got to make sure I do this next time, we do that. Did you set any goals for this coming legislative session?
Yes. So first of all, the process was completely different because I actually knew what to expect and when the timing and so the ebb and the flow of it to it. Last time, I just remember thinking it just for our three new colleagues on the South Shore, it just hits you like a fire hose, and you're just trying to keep up. You're lucky to find a good aide, and you're just trying to keep up.
Sure.
This time, I had a good feel for what the timing of everything was. So coming into session, I already had all of my legislation drafted. I was ready to file and really ready to get going. And I had I have a calendar of events, of things we want to accomplish. And so I very much had a very different process. First of all, it's just nice to not be the new kid on the block anymore. I have three wonderful new young colleagues, some fresh faces to be up there. So this time it's nice to have people coming to me instead of always looking to somebody else and saying, what does this mean? Can you explain this to me? It's nice to have my feet on the ground as I go into it. So, but the way I sort of approached it this time was to really think about, and you hear me talk about it when I campaign, what are the issues that are really important to the district? Mm. For me, it starts, that's the first lens, is what's going on in the district? What do we really need? What are the big issues? And that's why I, you know, coastal communities. This, no surprise to anyone, why I focus on climate change, and I've really filed a big bill to really put us on a schedule, on a plan, so that we're all working together across multiple sectors to achieve our climate change goals. And, you know, it can't all be about energy. It really has to be about transportation and home heating and all different things. But I want it to be intentional planning, because I don't think we should be doing this on the backs of other people. I think on just regular people, I think we should be doing this so everybody gleans the benefit of it. And it's only through thoughtful, intentional planning that we're going to both achieve the goals and have everyone glean the benefits. So I'm pretty excited about it, too. I think it's the kind of thing that begs innovation, and that's good for us because that means new jobs, so new economic sectors. So I think there's a lot of good things to talk about there. But you know me, the reason I focus on it is I will ask the state for millions of dollars in the seawall money and infrastructure improvements. So I just don't think I get to ask for all that money without then working on the policy pieces. So.
But you're not alone, because there are other state reps and state senators who are also have coastal communities that they represent, and then they could be there with you to ask for those monies. You had talked about the rush to draft your legislation. I believe it was the 18th. Everybody had their stuff in.
What was it
like to have that mad rush of getting, you know, filing your bills and getting them in, or, you know, reading through somebody else's and assisting them? What was that like this time?
Oh, it was exciting. So this time, since I knew, I've been actually having a lot of conversations around them and trying to get people to co-file with you or to co-sponsor with you. But it was exciting to be in the building and to really see all the advocates coming around, all the lobbyists, all the different interest groups pitching, you know, will you file this for me, what have you. And there's a lot of interesting things out there. So this time around, there was a tremendous amount of climate legislation. I'll put together a spreadsheet for you, but really some interesting things around electric vehicles, around 100% renewable net zero was my bill, around both the energy sectors, but also home heating sectors, a lot around transportation. So it's really exciting to see the real, actually this kind of had a lot of bill envy, if you will, because there was some really great stuff that got filed. So I'm equally excited to sign on to some things for people as well. So, but it wasn't just energy this time around. There's a lot of social justice things, a lot around healthcare and community health centers. There's a lot around some elders. There's some big important bills, a lot around education this time. Of course, last time one of the things that got left behind was the Foundation Formula Review Commission recommendations for funding the local aid on education. So that'll be a big thing to look for. So it's a lot of exciting stuff. We'll have a lot to talk about this year, but also this whole session.
Looking forward to it. And it's interesting you say that, because the governor just released his fiscal 2020 budget, a little more than $42 billion. Mm-hmm. Have you had a chance to look at it? What's the buzz up at the state? That's because we know the process is now the governor has put his forth.
Yep.
We know that down the road, it'll be the House.
Comes next to the House.
The House, and then it'll be the Senate. And before you know it,
yep.
folks will get together in a conference committee and hammer something out for the governor to either say yes or go, yeah, I veto this, this, and this. Yeah. And then we're you know, 4 or 5 days into July.
So I haven't, it's pretty thick. So I am just starting to wade through it. Of course, the first thing state reps always look for is local aid. And it looks like he held the local aid harmless with modest increases. So that's good for us. And that's good for our cities and towns because that means the House will only add to that and the Senate will continue to add to that. So that means our cities and towns will have good, strong local aid. And that's probably, in my opinion, the most important thing that we bring back to our communities. But yeah, he just filed it last week. Mm-hmm. And so we're just starting to wade through it all. But he's also filed a few other pieces of legislation, which I thought was interesting. One of them was around revenue, around climate change initiatives. So right. I was really glad to see the governor embracing that. As you know, on the South Shore, we all oppose the compressor station, and we were pretty disappointed that the governor or the DEP issued the air quality permits for the compressor station. That was a real blow to us. So it was a relief to see the governor at least starting to embrace some of the other climate change pieces and to actually put forward a bill that proposed a new tax to actually fund some of the work that he wants to do. So that was a relief.
And that's interesting you mentioned that because, yeah, that's one of two taxes that I was able to doing a little bit of research for not only this conversation but other conversations with state representatives and state senators. And that is that this is a real estate transfer tax, and this is going to go towards that, the climate change initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What are your thoughts? I mean, have you heard any conversation on this as to how the money is going to be used or spent, or is that still a conversation that has to be had?
I think that's still a conversation that has to be had. The other one that I saw that was important was the Community Preservation Act. There's been a number of bills that also filed looking to put a new tax or an increased tax in the same spot.
Sorry, my producer's telling you to get closer.
Am I talking too softly? I'm sorry.
No. But he's doing a good job on making sure the audio's, because we want all the folks at home to hear what you're saying. So please continue.
Yeah, so the Community Preservation Act, which is another one that folks will remember, because it funds a lot of local projects and initiatives here. And the governor, he put a tax in the same spot on the real estate as the same place where we usually get all of our CPA money. So I'm hoping that that won't compete there and that we'll be able to continue to expand our CPA. But there were some other interesting ones. The Fair Share got filed again as a regular legislative bill.
And for folks who don't know, what is the Fair Share bill?
So that's the one that would do the 4% on anything in excess of $1 million of annual revenue. So if I earn $1,001,000, I will pay an extra 4 cents on that extra dollar. And it's really, they refer to it as the millionaire's tax.
I was going to say it, but I didn't want to.
Well, it's what everyone knows it by. It's not really.
And then it might have been renamed while it was being refiled. So
I don't know about that. Hopefully they did, but I saw that got filed as a legislative bill. Mm. As you'll recall, it was a ballot initiative, and SJC ruled that it was drafted inappropriately. So now it's coming back as a regular piece of legislation, and so there's a lot. A lot of money bills on the table, and people seem pretty interested in looking for new revenues.
I think the thing that I heard was there is work in this budget or the governor's budget in regards to education, and we're looking to rebuild how education is funded. I think he put up to a little more than $260 million. And he's, if you look at his budgets as he's put them forth, he has, you know,
yes,
over time incrementally mm-hmm. increased, but a lot of folks are saying we had Kerry Rodriguez, who is, she calls herself the mom in chief of the Massachusetts Parents United, in which, you know, her problem isn't so much the funding, but it's a matter of is making sure that those monies are getting to the programs mm-hmm. where they're supposed to go, that they're not getting re-diverted for, you know, administrative costs or things that aren't necessarily benefiting the children themselves.
Right. Well, a lot of that predated me, the millionaire's tax predated me, but one of the things I think the theme was people were willing to pay more, but they wanted to know, they wanted to have that trust factor, that it was going to be spent on the things that were important to them. And I think, if memory serves, it was education and transportation were the two big items that people really saw that we should be investing in. Of course, I'm sure you read that the T is proposing some fare increases. So I have not seen those yet. So I can't wait to take a look at that and make sure that's done fairly and equitably. But I think those are the two areas that people, generally speaking, want to see some government investment.
Now, but have these hikes made it past the control board? Has the control board given the thumbs up on this, or is this something that's pending?
I think it's pending. I just saw a State House News article just before I was heading over here, so I haven't even looked at it yet myself.
Okay.
So, but we'll get briefed. They always brief the legislator on these things, so I'll actually get a briefing tomorrow.
And I'll have to make sure, because the State House News, very friendly to WATD anytime, whether we've got a news story or we have special guests here on Monday Night Talk, they're usually quick to make sure they will quote some of the legislators who were kind enough to come in to this building or call into the shows.
They do tremendous work.
They do a fantastic job.
Absolutely tremendous.
So if they're tuning in right now or if they're listening to this, thank you very much for at least paying attention to some of the outlets like our, you know, our little honest station here.
But we're off to a good start. I mean, I think it's exciting, a lot of the ideas that are being put forward, and it's the beginning of the session when anything can happen. We've got a lot. We've got 25 new state reps up there, which is a tremendous amount of new people to have in the building.
Are they all huddled into one room, or is it
yes,
broken
up
into
I'm so glad I'm not in the bullpen.
Yeah, we've actually had all three of the new south. We've had Kathy Lenatra on. We've had Patrick Kearney. He was on, I think, last week. And we had Allison Sullivan on.
Yeah.
What's it like, though? See, you've lost that leadership when you were coming in,
Representative Jim Cantwell.
Jimmy Cantwell and Tom Calder, they've gone on to other things that leave you to be the voice of reason, so to speak, at least as part of the South Shore caucus.
Happy to pay it forward. And Josh Cutler is a very seasoned and experienced rep. He's got great judgment.
Indeed.
He's been terrific, I know, and made himself available. And certainly our Senator Patrick O'Connor, you know, is a great person to work with. And we all work very well as a delegation. So it's actually kind of nice to have some new energy and excitement. And it's nice for me not to be the fresh face anymore and to feel like I've got my feet under me. And
I got a few stripes.
But I'm here for those guys, whatever they need. We're here for them. So.
I think that's important. It's very important, whether you're a D or an R. I mean, while you can have party differences, I think at the end of the day, it's a matter of, I mean, that's, if only Washington could take a page or two out of Massachusetts, you know, our legislators and how they conduct themselves.
Right. DNR, that's politics, but this is working together to do the work and the business of the district. And we all take that very seriously. And we all work very well together. So,
It's also interesting, and it's something, and I think I brought it up, I'm not sure if I brought it up with Kathy or if I brought it up with Allison, but it was an article, I want to say 3 or 4 weeks after the election, general election, that, you know, this, over the past 10 years, women have made strides.
Oh, yes.
Running for office, gaining office. Mm-hmm. You look at the constitutional offices, all women, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Fantastic.
And I tell you, Speaker DeLeo has been tremendous. If you do the work and you're smart and you're savvy, he puts you into leadership positions. So if you look at how many women there are and how many positions, leadership positions there that he has, women fill those positions by and large. So there's real opportunity for this incoming class to get their feet under them, work really hard, shine in the spotlight, and work their way up into to positions where they can really affect some good policy changes. So I think there are 13 new women coming in, and I have to say, it's actually really nice to look around the chamber and see more women in there. So I never mind hanging with the guys, but it's actually really nice to have some sisters in the room. So.
What was it like this time around? I mean, was your husband right there with you? Do you have anybody else in the chamber for taking the picture, doing the oath?
So this time I actually brought my aide, Colette. in with me.
Fantastic.
Isn't she awesome?
She's awesome.
So smart. Came out of Tufts. This kid is fierce. She's amazing. And everybody should feel free to call our office if you need any constituent help, any services, if there's any questions you have about policy or you just want to let us know, just call 617-722-2320. Ask for either Joan or Colette. And we'd be happy to take care of you. But yeah, she was a terrific addition to my staff. You know, Ryan left. Mm-hmm. I was heartbroken. He's a great kid. But she's wonderful, too. And we've been doing some great work together. So, yeah. But so I brought her to sit with me on the floor of the house when we actually were sworn in. My husband happened to be traveling. And I thought, you know, these kids, they work so hard behind the scenes. They never get any of the glory. I said, come sit on the floor with me. So there was...
What was her response?
Oh my God, she was so excited. And she stayed with me the whole time. Right? It's a pretty long ceremony, but she stayed with me the whole time. We just had a ball laughing and really enjoying the moment, enjoying it, because there's a lot of pieces to the swearing in, so it was good.
Anything about the governor's speech that resonated with you?
You know, I feel like he came back really strong, and he seems like this time he's really looking to accomplish some real strong initiatives. Of course, for me, like I said, near and dear to my heart is always the climate change. And for me, I really see it as almost a sea change, the way that he talks about it now versus the way that the administration talked about it when he was first elected. I really feel like they understand the issue now, and they're starting to take, you know, steps towards it. That's one of the reasons why my bill is so important, because it really forces them to do the backcast and figure out what the reduction schedule should be and to figure out the plan so everyone will know. I look at it as almost like a frame for all of the initiatives that will come, all of the brilliant ideas that will come behind. And there's great expertise in the administration, in those agencies. So we really can do this. The other thing, of course, is transportation. And bless his heart, he's tackled the T. And it doesn't ostensibly seem like we've made a lot of, there's still, you know, some unreliable services, is still that infrequency, but they have actually made some pretty formative steps towards it. I think that's going to be a slow and steady one.
I'm just going to say this. I've had the opportunity to ride. I haven't been out to Chicago per se, but I have ridden the New York subway and I've been to D.C., but the MBTA isn't necessarily all that bad. It isn't. No. I had actually, there was one time that I was down in D.C. that we were coming from a Nationals game, and the train we were on broke down, and it took 20 minutes. Now it was a hot day. Oh, 20 minutes to get everybody out of the train.
Oh my gosh!
So they could send another train down. Because people would get out, and everybody's like, hey, what are you doing? And then people would go back in. It's like, and they're trying to say, get out. And it took a while to move that car out, get that car out of there, bring in another train.
Well, I tell you, the people that work at the T, they care about their jobs. They've been doing this a long time, and they are there front and center for the riders. Like I said, it's one of those things where it's been years of neglect, and now it's
slow. Won't get fixed overnight.
Nope. Slow and steady. That's the path, and I think he has tackled that. So yeah, we'll see. I know the other big bill that's important to the governor is his housing bill. So we'll see what actually gets filed with that. And but it's nice to hear to see them tackling
important issues
like that, because quite frankly, that housing, we worry about it in terms of less expensive housing for people who, you know, affordable small housing, but it's also an economic development issue, and we'll be stagnant if we don't tackle some of these big issues. So it's nice to see him stepping out and starting to really tackle it.
There she is, State Representative Joan Moschino, representing the 3rd Plymouth District. Thank you so much for coming in this evening.
Always a pleasure.
Make sure you tell Colette I said hi.
I promise.
And we'll look forward to seeing you down the road in a couple of weeks.
Excellent. I'll bring John Harry with me the next time.
There
we come.
You go. It's fantastic.
We'll have fun.
All right. We are going to step aside, and when we come back, we're going to speak with Dr. Shields. She's in the room. She's an oncology doctor. We'll talk a little bit about Signature Healthcare and the new Green Cancer Center when we come back here on Monday Night Talk.
Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Saturday, November 3rd, 1955, Bobby Palmer gets his brand new basketball backboard nailed in a place on the telephone pole directly in front of old Mrs. Borden's house. Now, way back in 55, all backboards were metal and located at the park. If you wanted your own, you made it yourself, out of wood. And Bobby's was a beauty. He was 10 years old and handy. The problem was old Mrs. Borden.
You get off my lawn, young man. I'm calling the Brady Police Department. Now, you give me that big ball there.
Bobby was not about to give up that basketball. Instead, he gave it a mighty heave at the backboard. The ball hit the rim, shook loose the metal hoop that fell through the windshield of old Mrs. Borden's 49 Hudson.
I'm Tiny of Tiny & Sons Glass. We come to your work or home, and we fix your windshield. Your insurance company covers it. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
What basketball hoop?
McWiggins Pub is a fashionable, upscale Irish pub in downtown Whitman. The pub's charming ambience is the perfect setting for Valentine's dinner with your sweetheart. Start with appetizers like the Whitman Sampler for two with potato skins, fried pickles, onion rings, chicken tenders, and mozzarella sticks. McWiggins' menu offers everything from steak tips to shepherd's pie to the best pizzas on the South Shore. And of course, they have Guinness on tap. McWiggins Pub is now accepting reservations for Valentine's Day. Call 781-447-7333 today to reserve a romantic dinner for Valentine's Day. And coming soon, the patio at McWiggins Pub.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, we are back here, Monday Night Talk. And just a quick note, don't forget Valentine's Day is just around the corner. And please, you know, we have great sponsors, whether it's Brendan Smoke Shop, Tiny & Sons Glass. You know, if you have a problem, there's a little crack, call them up. They get a great business, not to mention the one and only McWiggins Pub. You get Valentine's Day around the corner. Why not make reservations now? As not only do they have a great menu, but they got a great service, and the ambiance is second to none. So, enough with me talking a little bit about my fantastic sponsors who make this program possible, because another sponsor, Signature Healthcare, Brockton Hospital, is in the house, and we have Dr. Reeve Shields. I actually had to ask her, that's why I said Dr. Shields first couple times, because I didn't want to, you know, make a mess of her name. So, Doctor, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Kevin.
I know you're not new to radio, because you already have been broken in. You did the morning show.
Yes, by Rob and Lisa.
Yeah, so now you're here with Kevin on Monday Night Talk.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Of course, you are an oncology doctor.
Yes, I am.
And you're with the Green Center. It's called the Green Cancer Center.
Center, yes.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I live in Marshfield.
Nice.
I live about 5 minutes from here, so it's easy going home. And I, you know, grew up in New York City, and I did my training and residency in Rhode Island.
Is that why you smiled when I mentioned about the New York subway?
Yes,
you smiled, and I'm like,
grew up
on
in Queens, New York.
So you know the subway.
I know,
like,
the subway system.
Horrible.
I went to high school in Queens, and
I bless you, my dear.
Yes, so it was. That's why I smiled. I'm very familiar with it, and I can still go through the subway with my eyes closed. Nothing's changed that much over the years.
Bless you.
You worked at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute for 7.5 years. And most recently, I have changed positions and am now a medical oncologist and a hematologist at the Green Cancer Center at Brockton. It's an affiliation between two major institutions, the Signature Healthcare Center and Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center.
That's fantastic. And you know what's, I think the thing that I had mentioned at the start of the show when I was kind of giving a rundown is that, you know, a lot has changed over the past 20 or 30 years. When somebody was diagnosed with cancer, you know, it wasn't necessarily that you were able to be treated in local hospitals. You had to go for specialty treatment. You had to go to Boston. You had to go to the big city in order to get. That's not the case anymore, is it?
Not anymore. So, you know, the Signature Healthcare Cancer Center is a full-service cancer center that provide world-class care to the South Shore and its residents. So the care that you would receive in Boston, you can receive here in your neighborhood, in your backyard. So, you know, as a group, the cancer center consists of medical oncologists. There's three of us, Dr. Lisa Manera and Dr. Rolf Frater. It also houses radiation oncology, Dr. Chowdhury and Dr. Stephen Lane, in the same building. The second floor of the cancer center is currently being renovated and hopefully will house some of the surgical specialties that pertains to cancer as well. You know, as you had said, Kevin, you know, over the years and even over the past 5 years, mm-hmm. cancer has changed dramatically and for the better. We are now, and has gotten more complicated. It does not only involve medical oncology, it also involves radiation oncology, surgery, pathologist, and so much more. The Cancer Center provides, you know, a lot of services, ancillary care. We do have nutritionists, so we have a social worker in the building. And, you know, in order to be successful in caring for cancer, you know, it involves a village. And we do have all those services to be able to help patients in their cancer care.
What about as far as multidisciplinary care? What are some of the different cares that are offered in that degree?
Sure. So, you know, every week we have a tumor board. We call it a multidisciplinary tumor board that involves the pathologist, the radiation oncologist, the medical oncologist, and the surgeons. It also involves, you know, the pulmonologists, lung doctors. We discuss patients and cases that we see during the week or the week after. And what happens is we review the pathology, we review, you know, images and CAT scans, and we come up with a cohesive plan for the patients. So when we do see the patients, there's a plan for everybody. Gone are the days where you're calling five different doctors, you know, to direct your care. And oftentimes, a lot of what patients complain about is, you know, one doctor's not communicating with the other. This multidisciplinary care model actually make sure that everybody has a cohesive plan and everybody is in agreement with the plan of care for the patient. So patients really come into one center and they're able to hear a cohesive plan from everybody. And, you know, it eliminates confusion. Cancer already is a very hard diagnosis to take, diagnosis to live.
Indeed.
And having a cohesive plan for them makes a whole lot of difference in their care.
And I think anybody who has, I think everybody has had a family member who has had one degree of cancer or another, helping to do some stuff around my dad's house this weekend, realizing that I lost a couple of loved ones to breast cancer, to lung cancer, dying at a young age, mm-hmm. and what they went through in order to seek care. We mentioned in regards to having local care, but also I think on top of talking about local care, because you can get something that's local,
of course,
but what kind of quality is it? And is it safe to say, would you like to boast how you could get the same excellent care just a few minutes from your house instead of having to hit the traffic and go into Boston and try to find parking?
Of course. I can say that I'm very proud of the facility that I'm working at. I'm very proud with the caliber of service and care that all the patients, doctors in the cancer center give and provide. I would say that, you know, I will bring my mother to the cancer center. I wouldn't treat her myself, but, you know, one of my colleagues would. But I think that what we provide here is the same service. So you will get in Boston, none, you know, without the 2-hour traffic on the way over and the $20 parking ticket. So I think that, you know, this is a great service that we can provide to the community, and they get excellent care. They get a multidisciplinary care with excellent surgeons, radiation oncologists, and I think that we are all very committed to providing excellent quality care for our patients.
Okay. And I think it's also important to mention Signature Healthcare's, the Green Cancer Center's affiliation with Beth Israel. Can you talk about that for a couple minutes?
Sure. There has already been an existing relationship between Signature Healthcare Center and Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. As medical oncologists, we are all affiliated with Harvard Medical School, and we have a direct line to the services in Boston as well if you need be. We do treat greater than 95% of cancers here locally in the community. That being said, you know, there's a small portion of patients, for example, with acute leukemias that cannot be treated in the community. It has to be done in Boston. But you know, the affiliation between Signature Health and Beth Israel Deaconess has been longstanding in other departments such as orthopedics, and there's been a huge need for a cancer center in the Brockton area, in the South Shore area. So then came, you know, that marriage and an affiliation with the cancer center. I brought pictures here of the Signature Cancer Center.
That's fantastic. And I drive by there once or twice a day.
Yeah.
And it is a phenomenal building.
It's a beautiful cancer center.
One of these days, and hopefully I'm just going for a visit and not because...
Oh, please.
Not that I'm going there for a treatment.
Yes, for a visit would be better.
But just to see for myself the Green Cancer Center and all the work that has gone into having such a building like this. And you've talked about with his work being done on the second floor, and not that a disease is like cancer is something that use a phrase or an adjective exciting, but you have to, there has to be some kind of an excitement as to being able to have certain machines and tools to be able to combat this disease, because I think all of you are, the oncology team is in this to win it.
We are. The goal is, of course, curing cancer. And you know, we are doing all that we can in order to defeat it. We not only give chemotherapy, but we also give immunotherapy. We're able to do genomic sequencing in certain cancers in order to give targeted therapy to our patients.
Goodness.
We have the radiation oncology department. And now, hopefully, over the next few days or maybe a week or so, are able to provide what we call SBRT, which is stereotactic body irradiation, which is a focused radiation to the tumor itself. I mean, the technology that you would receive in Boston, you will be able to receive here in the South Shore.
So, on top of it, knowing that all the studies that are ongoing and the different treatments that are being developed on a daily basis, again, you don't have to go to Boston, because right in Brockton, in the Green Cancer Center, where you can get the same treatment, whether it's, you know...
The same excellent quality care that you will be receiving in Boston. You know, we're very committed to deliver the same service to the community.
Again, we're talking with Dr. Reeve Shields, and she's a new oncology doctor. Oh, are you actually new, or are you just newer to the staff?
I'm newer to the staff, okay. So,
I
yeah.
wanted to make sure I said that correctly. Okay, because I started out making sure I could say your name, your first name correctly. I want to make sure that I also get your title correct.
Yes.
Anything that we haven't touched upon during our conversation here, but you kind of feel is important to expressing and telling our listeners?
I mean, we are medical oncologists in the facility, but we're also hematologists. We treat a variety of other diseases aside from cancer, things such as anemia and blood disorders, blood clots, and so on and so forth. So we treat those patients as well. So, you know, we're medical oncologists, but we're also hematologists.
That's fantastic. Well, I want to thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you for having me.
And coming in. And continued success and looking forward to it. It's funny you mentioned Dr. Frater. Dr. Frater has been on this, not only in this program, but he's done segments on the station. It's exciting. The growth that we're seeing at Signature Healthcare and the specialty when it comes to cancer. So thank you for coming in.
We'll look forward. Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Well, you'll be back because you love doing radio.
Yes.
All right. We are going to step aside. That completes the first hour of Monday Night Talk. Coming up, second hour, a lot of fun. On deck, we're going to speak with Rick Cerrone, who is the editor-in-chief of Baseball Digest. In just a few moments, you are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
WATD FM Marshfield. WATD Brockton.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
McWiggins Pub is a fashionable, upscale Irish pub in downtown Whitman. The pub's charming ambience is the perfect setting for Valentine's dinner with your sweetheart. Start with appetizers like the Whitman Sampler for two with potato skins, fried pickles, onion rings, chicken tenders, and mozzarella sticks. McWiggins' menu offers everything from steak tips to shepherd's pie to the best pizzas on the South Shore. And of course, they have Guinness on tap. McWiggins Pub is now accepting reservations for Valentine's Day. Call 781-447-7333 today to reserve a romantic dinner for Valentine's Day. And coming soon, the patio at McWiggins Pub.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we are back. Second hour of Monday Night Talk. Warming up in the bullpen, second part of the hour, we will have Jerry Thornton, Barstool Sports, author of Five Rings and From Darkness to Dynasty. They'll be in the house as well. He'll be in the house as well as Kerry J. Byrne from coldhardfootballfacts.com. And we're going to talk a little bit Super Bowl 53 down in Atlanta. But first, we have a gentleman who is joining us. He is the editor-in-chief of Baseball Digest. Also somebody who, I want to say many, many moons ago, I had the opportunity, I spoke to him a couple of different times, on a similar set of call letters. Again, we are 95.9 FM and 1460 AM WATD, but the 1460 signal used to be BET and WXBR. So my next guest is also a former VP of Public Relations for the Pittsburgh Pirates, also a senior director of media relations for the New York Yankees. And just as a disclaimer, gentleman is an executive, not the former catcher, Rick Cerrone. Mr. Cerrone, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Well, thank you, Kevin, and thank you for clearing that up.
And I want to say it's been a while since you and I. It has been, but I remember the couple of conversations that we've had in the past were pretty good. So when I saw Miss Mark Goldman, who I do a lot of work with, had suggested you as, I'm like, oh my goodness, I remember Rick from you know, way back when doing interviews.
Way back when, absolutely.
I'm looking forward to the conversation, and we're here to talk.
Me too.
We're here to talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame.
Okay, not the Super Bowl.
No. I got two other experts for that.
Okay.
Talk to you, if you will. Interesting class that got made it into the Hall this year.
Well, it's a good class. I mean, I'm speaking specifically of the four former players that went in via the baseball writers.
Correct.
Excuse my cold, but I thought it was a solid class. I thought they were all very deserving. I guess the interesting thing was, we live in such a society today, Kevin, where everybody was pressuring the writers. Mariano Rivera better be unanimous. Well, I never got caught up in that, and I never believed anyone in a vote of 400-plus people on anything would be unanimous. But you know what? Mo was, and God bless him. You're never going to meet a better individual than Mariano Rivera. So I'm really happy for Mo. I had the honor of being with him from 1996, when he was really just a baby, right up till 2006, and I worked with Messina from 2001 to 2006. So, I loved him as well. So I was really happy for them.
Other than being a stellar closer, what was it that he was able to accomplish with those 400 voters to be able to get 100%? What was it? Because I know some guys struggle, like the Eddie Murrays, the guys who were temperamental with newspaper writers and those who were who could vote. What was it about Mo?
Well, I don't think Eddie really struggled because, and Steve Carlton as well, who didn't have a good relationship with the media, because they got in, I believe, on the first ballots. But I think what goes into it is that, first of all, through social media, there was a lot of pressure on the writers because, they were going to identify the people that didn't vote for them, and they're going to set themselves up for ridicule. But, Babe Ruth wasn't a first ballot Hall of Famer. Tom Seaver, Ted Williams, Carl Yastrzemski. You can name everybody in the Hall of Fame that were voted by the baseball writers. But the one point that was made about Mariano Rivera was, this is the greatest player in the history of baseball at his position. So I think there was pressure. And here's the other thing that no one's talking about. Nobody sent in, and here's a reason why some people weren't unanimous in the past, or maybe not unanimous, but nobody sent in a protest ballot. Because in the past, if you send in a blank ballot for whatever your reason, and usually it's to protest something, that ballot counts as a cast ballot, which would keep someone from being unanimous. That did not happen this year, and I was really happy to see that. And one of the things I'd like to see the Hall of Fame change, if they haven't changed it already, is that if you send in a blank ballot, it should not count as a cast ballot.
I think that's fair. I think that's,
I think
that's,
it's
totally
more than fair.
I
think it's more than fair. The other thing I'd like to see them change is, don't allow writers to make their ballots public while the voting is still going on. I don't see any real need. The writers that, here's my ballot, and, 200 people made their ballots public before the announcement of the winners. That's okay, but don't do it while others are voting. Don't give any reason, well, this guy voted for this guy, therefore I'm not, I don't have to do this, blah, blah, blah. So that's the other thing I'd like to see changed.
I think the other thing that was unique, Roy Halladay, as he is posthumously being inducted into the Hall of Fame. Talk to me about his being deserving. I mean, he won two Cy Youngs. Folks saw him as a workhorse in the industry. He was great to have on your staff, but he had 200 wins. I mean, is the benchmark still to have 250 or 300 wins, or is it your body of work?
I think it's your body of work. And when you talk about a perfect game, a no-hitter in the postseason, two Cy Young Awards, I don't think there any longer really is a benchmark. What I'm seeing and what I saw with Messina is that the wins over, wins above replacement. Well, in my case, it's wins over 500. When a guy like Mike Messina, this guy was more than 100 games over 500. Now, you look at Andy Pettit, he was also 100 games over 500, and he may be the only eligible pitcher other than Roger Clemens to be 100. I don't even know if Clemens was 100 games over, but Pettit was, and I don't see headed getting enough consideration to move up the ladder, although he did survive and stay on the ballot. I don't see him getting to the necessary 75%. But I don't think any more people look at the numbers like people are telling you now. Oh, there'll never be another 300-game winner. Well, you know, we'll see. But I think people are looking at it differently. But I certainly think Roy Halladay was a deserving Hall of Famer.
Now, you also mentioned Mike Mussina. Now, this is a guy who he didn't win a Cy Young, but to his credit, he did claim 7 Gold Gloves. He did make 5 All-Star games. He won 270 games, and I think I believe he pitched more than 350 career innings. Did he deserve to get in first time around? Is he a Hall of Famer? I mean, he is.
Well, let me stop you right there. It wasn't his first time around. It was his 6th time around.
Ah.
And when he started, he only got 20% of the vote the first year and at the press conference. And Mike has turned into quite the funny guy. He just stole that press conference with his wit. But he thanked the 20% of the writers that voted him the first year that kept him on the ballot. But, you know, to anybody that might question Mike Mussina, go look at his numbers. Look at how many years, look at the records, 18-8, 17-6, you know, he always had real good winning seasons, and he never won a Cy Young Award, only won 20 games his last year, but he finished in the top 6 in Cy Young Award winners multiple times. So he was always in the conversation. He pitched in a really tough division, you know, pitching always against the Yankees, the Red Sox, or the Orioles, you know, when he was with the Yankees, in those bandbox ballparks. So I definitely think look, I always used to say somebody's got to be the best player, you know, not in the Hall of Fame, you know. You know, I guess conversely, you know, not everybody's Walter Johnson, you know, or Bob Feller or Tom Seaver.
Right.
But I think, you know, I think Mike's body of work definitely is deserving of being in the Hall of Fame. The problem I have, Kevin, is with these committees that they've come up with that go back, you know, they used to call the Veterans Committee. And they used to look at players from bygone years and whatever. Now we're looking at players that dropped off the ballot within the decade. I don't really understand that, you know, if a player never got 10% of the writer's vote, dropped off the ballot, why within 10 years do we feel the need to go back and revisit that? I really feel that that's a slap in the face to the writers.
Very, very interesting. And so are you hoping that there will be some changes when it comes to voting or having certain boards deciding as far as who's allowed to be inducted?
Well, I think the boards serve a purpose. The committees serve a purpose, mm-hmm. especially when you look back at, you know, players from many years ago, the Gil Hodges of the world. Although they've been looked at many times, there are people that slip through the cracks. There are people. I'll give you a perfect example. I never believed that Gil Hodges was a Hall of Famer until I read somewhere that when he retired, he was the all-time leader among right-handed hitters in the National League for home runs. I'm like, you are the all-time leader for home runs in the National League among right-handed hitters? I kind of think you might be a Hall of Famer. So I do think there is a need to go back and revisit, but I don't think you should revisit someone that retired in 2004, 2000, what, you know, whatever it might be at this juncture. We're not really looking at it, you know, with that much perspective.
Yeah, we're speaking with Rick Cerrone, editor-in-chief of Baseball Digest, talking a little bit about the Baseball Hall of Fame 2019 results and some of those who made the cut, who are going to be enshrined. And now the next gentleman we're going to talk about, I'm talking about him in a selfish way because I'm saying, I'm talking, of course, about probably a gentleman who has been seen as one of the greatest designated hitters during his time, Edgar Martinez. Knowing that this was his 10th and final try to be able to get in, he finally got in. What was it that got him across the finish line?
Well, you know, his vote total has grown. His percentage has grown over the years. I really think, and I can talk to you about something else related to this particular thing. About 2 or 3 years ago, the Hall of Fame went in and they cut out a number of voters that were no longer covering baseball, but had lifetime, you know, writer's cards. But they were, I guess, kind of removed from the game, although it's not fair to say that about all of them. They still followed the game. I think that that block of voters was really resistant to voting for a pure designated hitter. Okay, so now with those off the rolls, I think the modern-day voter, the voting constituency today, recognizes that, and I also would throw in that they were also less likely to vote for a closer. So if they were still on, Rivera likely would not have been unanimous. But I think the current block of voters has realized that designated hitter has been a position in baseball for more than 45 years. Actually, for exactly 45 years. So, you know, he was one of the best, if not the best, at his position in baseball. And he's a very deserving Hall of Famer.
So, I told you, well, I prefaced my comment regarding Edgar for a very good reason. Being a Boston guy, knowing, because the thought was when David Ortiz retired, it would be difficult because a guy like Edgar Martinez had yet to break the threshold to get into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Now that has been achieved. Does this pave the way for David when it's time, when his time is up, to be voted upon, that he may just indeed, whether it's his first year, second year, or whenever, be able to get into the Hall of Fame?
Oh, David Ortiz is an absolute Hall of Famer, likely a first ballot Hall of Famer, whether or not Edgar Martinez went in this year. That's the way I feel about him, because he's also got the postseason numbers to go along with his body of work. The only thing I think that might keep David Ortiz from being a first ballot Hall of Famer might be some people who kind of protest and say, I'm not voting him on the first ballot because of that so-called failed drug, you know, PED test.
Oh, yeah, down in 2003.
Right. Yeah. So, which, you know, it's an absolute sin that that ever got out, because, you know, those players agreed that they would take these tests that would be anonymous, and that test is what, because the results were over the threshold, really got testing going. I don't think any of those players should have been. So when people cry today, make the list public, make the list public, absolutely not. I think that would be a tragedy if that was done.
Okay. We got a few more minutes here with you, Rick, and I'm enjoying the conversation. It's too bad we got to talk football. No, it isn't. But
okay. Well, let's also mention that the current issue of Baseball Digest is on sale now with Walker Buehler on the cover. And Kevin, you might be interested to know that we kind of broke a story, we revealed it or something in this issue, that with the retirement of Adrian Beltre and David Wright, there likely will not be a team captain in Major League Baseball this year for the first time in history.
Really?
Yeah. I think that's really interesting because, and some of the reasons are, although no one will really get to the reason, is that, you know, with all the analytics today, you can't really quantify leadership, and that's not what teams are looking for. And I also think that it kind of, you know, hamstrings the general managers for roster flexibility and also paying more money when you ordain someone basically the face of your franchise. But,
and that's on, you said that's on shelves
that's
everywhere?
On sale now, Walker Buehler on the cover. It's the January-February issue, and we are putting to bed this week our 2019 preview issue. Evan Drellich, a Boston writer, does our AL East preview. I won't tell you who he picked to win the AL East, but last year he picked the Yankees, I will tell you that. Yeah. But basically, it was a too close to call type thing. And I think it'll be the same this year. I don't know which team he's picking, but we're excited about that. And I'm just hoping that this week, before that drop-dead deadline, we can land Harper and Machado and maybe Keuchel on a team.
Well, let me ask you this, if you don't mind me digressing for half a second.
And I'm more than happy to talk Super Bowl with you.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a Giants season ticket holder for 35 years.
Yeah, listen, I didn't realize you were going to break out a salt shaker, rub it on my wound.
No.
Hey, listen, I hope Eli enjoys those rings because I don't know if he's going to be going back to the big game anytime soon.
Okay. I think he'll be back. Whether he gets back to the Super Bowl, I'd have to say you're probably right.
Hmm. He excelled in those games. There could be a debate as to if there wasn't a little luck involved. Although I will say the second game, I think the Giants earned it.
Oh, I agree. So
absolutely. Well, so let me ask my one of my last questions in regards to. So you got three big names, that are there but not really. And that is Curt Schilling, who this last time around he got close to 61%.
Right.
Roger Clemens.
Right.
59.5%.
Right.
Followed by Barry Bonds, 51.1%. Now, we know with Roger and Barry, there is that question as to steroids. Well, it's not really a question. I believe
exactly.
That Roger's... You know what I mean? But of these three... Who is likely to make it in the Hall?
I'm going to say that of those three people, the person that I would bet would be the one that get in, if any of them get in, would be Curt Schilling. But, you know, Curt Schilling, who I hate to use the word borderline guy, but, you know, he's not Walter Johnson, but he does have tremendous postseason numbers. You know, and he's getting 60% of the vote. He would be getting more of the vote, but guys are looking at that integrity, you know, sportsmanship, character on the ballot because of basically the things he says. And if that can be toned down, maybe there's a chance. Now, with Bonds and Clemens, and before I mentioned about that block of older writers coming off, everybody thought, those guys aren't voting for Bonds and Clemens. They're real conservative. They're not going to vote for, you know, guys with PEDs in their background. But when they came off the ballot, the jump did not go up that much. The jump wasn't that big. So they're still under 60%. That's a big jump to have to make in 3 years. And I don't see why it would change. I don't see someone not voting for Roger Clemens or Barry Bonds this year. And I got a full disclosure, I love them both because I had them both. I had Barry in Pittsburgh when he was a very young player.
Sure.
And I had Roger, the veteran guy. And I will say one thing about Roger Clemens. You know, best guy I ever had as far as being a good teammate. And, you know, I mean, I just love Roger Clemens. But I don't see it happening.
Okay. What about Larry Walker? Larry Walker's in his final year of eligibility, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a tough stretch for Larry Walker, and Larry is really kind of the victim of that Coors Field debate because the numbers are so much better, and others have told me that he just wasn't on the field enough. But, you know, it's just, you know, getting back to Clemens and Bonds real quick, I mean, you got a guy like Fred McGriff, right? If Bonds and Clemens were to get in, how'd you like to be Fred McGriff and know that if I had just used PEDs, maybe I would have hit another seven home runs and I'd have 500 and I'd be in? So when people say, well, what's the big deal? Well, there's the big deal. You know, there's the big deal.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, you know, Harold Baines, everybody's questioning Harold Baines, myself included. But somebody pointed out that, you know, if Harold Baines didn't go through three lengthy work stoppages, he would have probably easily had 3,000 hits, and we're not debating him.
Right, yeah, he just got in, correct?
He got in on one of those committees, and that's the question I had as to, you know, nothing against Harold Baines, some unbelievable person, but why are we? Was there some great outcry that there was some injustice done? Mm. You know, within the last 10 years, I think we could have taken a little more time on that. But you know, he probably would have had 3,000 hits. So they're looking at things a little differently now.
With your blessing, my next guest, one of my next guests is here, and he's actually a writer for Barstool Sports. Jerry Thornton is here, and actually he's like, hey, I can get in on this. Did you? Would you be okay with this, Rick, for him jumping in on this?
I could for the next couple of minutes, sure.
Sure, hi,
Jerry.
Hi, it's a pleasure to talk to you for the first time.
Great to be with you as well.
You know, and you touched on a few things. That's why I'm kind of champing at the bit here. It's the idea of, like, just in general with the Baseball Hall of Fame, and I'm a huge fan, and I've been invested in it emotionally since I was a little kid, it's that far too often it's about the back, well, we used to call the back of the baseball card, which I suppose
right.
today we should say the baseball reference page,
oh, right.
and how many boldface numbers you have
right.
in there, as opposed to, you know, two guys who obviously I care about more than anybody is David Ortiz and Curt Schilling, and
mm-hmm.
also Clemens and Bonds. Imagine trying to tell the story of baseball in the 21st century where it doesn't include those guys in the Baseball Hall of Fame, but it includes, say, Burt Blyleven. You know, I'm not dumping on Burt Blyleven, but nobody ever saw a weekend series of matchups and said, oh boy, they got Blyleven on Saturday. That's going to be a toughie.
Right. Okay,
but
well, that's a very good point, and let me address that. And first of all, I'm going to give you full disclosure. You know, one of my PR clients is the Taylor Hooten Foundation that educates kids about staying away from PEDs, because Taylor Hooten was a young high school athlete who took steroids because his coach told him he needed to get bigger. And he did, and then when he came off it, because no one knows how to treat someone that's using steroids, he just went cold turkey, went into a deep depression, and committed suicide. So I want there to be full disclosure. But this is the point I want to make, Jerry. Everybody, to all those that say, how can you tell the story of baseball, the history of baseball, without this person or that person, Pete Rose, Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds? You can't. But they're all in the Hall of Fame. It is the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. So when you walk in the Hall of Fame, you walk through a timeline from the 19th century, and oh, there's 1919, the Black Sox. There's Joe Jackson's bat. There's Joe Jackson's photo. Now we go into the 1980s. There's Pete Rose's spikes, his bat, his jacket, his helmet. Oh, he broke Ty Cobb's record. There's Roger Clemens, who pitched these no-hitters. There's Barry Bonds, who hit 73 home runs and broke the all-time run. It's all there.
Right.
The only thing they're not doing is bestowing the highest honor by giving you a plaque. And now people say, well, put an asterisk on the plaque, put a little notation. That's silliness. That's silliness. But that's the argument that I would give you, Jerry, that no, you can't tell the story, but the Baseball Hall of Fame doesn't tell it without those people.
Right.
They're all over the museum. The Hall of Fame is just a marble gallery of plaques that give the highest honor, but it's very clear to everybody that if you do these things, whether it's gamble on your own, you know, bet on your own team, there are penalties. There have to be deterrents, because there's a kid out there that's going to say, well, he did PEDs and he's in the Hall of Fame, so there's no reason for me not to do it.
Rick, I got to tell you, this has been a great conversation. I know that pitchers and catchers report in about 16 days, so maybe we can have you back on sometime during spring training to kind of give a little bit of a preview as to what we're going to see for the 2019 season.
Kevin, you got my number. Whenever you need me, just give me a call.
I love it. And now, before I let you go, give me the winner and the score of Super Bowl 53.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And you can't pick the Giants.
I'm going to say New England 27-23. Now, I do have to tell you that selfishly, I hope New England's score ends with a 3. And
is that one of your squares?
LA's score ends with a 5 for my own selfish reasons. But I think it's going to be 27-23. I am not betting against the greatest football coach in the history of the NFL and the greatest quarterback.
Rick, I'll be rooting for Patriots 65, St. Louis 3. Patriots 63, St. Louis 5. Yeah. Field goal and a safety for the Rams, and we're totally
there
up.
There you go.
I
call them St. Louis.
Goodness. From your mouth to God's ears.
Rick, listen, have yourself a great evening, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, man. Anytime.
You got it. There he is. Rick Cerrone, editor-in-chief for Baseball Digest, a former executive for the Pittsburgh Pirates and the New York Yankees. He admitted it. He both guys, Clemens and Bonds, they were in the organization when he was in the front office. So that's fantastic. Listen, we got to step aside because we got important business to take care of after the break. Football, Super Bowl 53. Jerry Thornton, Kerry J. Byrne in the house in just 60 seconds. You're listening to Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD.
Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Glass, not Dr. Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Glass. You see, when I was a kid, my dad took me to the doctors. For some reason, I don't remember. I do remember all those certificates, the diplomas, and all of them were written in Latin even. So one day I said, Dad, I'm going to be a doctor. Luckily for the general public, Dad said no. Tiny knows best. And now, I do have an office, and the walls are loaded with certificates. All my autoglass technicians are certified and qualified to do all your windshield repair and replacement. My dad would be very proud of us.
My boys do a good job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
My dad did a great job.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Hey, we are back for the final segment of Monday Night Talk. And you know what? The week before the Super Bowl is perfect. It's always been kind of the thing that I've done. Especially with, well, the two gentlemen who are here. And I want to say, actually, gentlemen. Well, I say that loosely.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's just these guys know the game. They know the stats. And what's even better is that I had actually, it's the thing that I bring up to Kerry all the time. Because Kerry, this year he's not traveling because Jerry actually sent me. He goes, "Is Kerry going to be here? Is he going to be down in Atlanta?" I go, "No, I think he's local." I asked him that, and the reason why I'm saying this is, and I don't have the clip this year, but there were many moons. I've been doing this with Kerry going back many moons, where there was one time he was on his. I'll let him tell the story, but we got our conversation about the Super Bowl interrupted. Because the police somehow intervened. This is down in Dallas, right?
This has become a legendary story in my life. So it was the...
live on air.
I was telling someone about this today when I knew I was being on with Kevin and Jerry. And it was the Green Bay-Pittsburgh Super Bowl in Dallas. Okay? And I had to go pick up a rental car from downtown Dallas. And there's obviously DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth, which is a big airport in the middle of, the middle of nowhere. By the way, Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, I think, is bigger than the city of Boston. It's like that big. It's like a half an hour ride from the car rental
right,
to the terminal.
And you land and you can't see the skyline anywhere. It's just horizon in 360 degrees.
So we didn't go to Dallas Fort Worth. We went to Love Field, which is, for some local context, is where they took JFK's body out of when he was shot in Dallas. It was a local airport before the international airports in Dallas. So anyway, we're driving around, me and a buddy of mine, and I'm on the air with you and your crew doing
Keith Hayes.
It's like a day or two before the Super Bowl, and our cab driver didn't know where the car rental spot was. So we're this is, you know, 8 years after 9/11. We're driving around in circles around Love Field, Dallas Airport, looking for the car rental terminal, and we get pulled over by the cops. And I'm talking to you, and the cab driver doesn't speak English, and I'm trying to explain to the cop, we're not terrorists. We're just looking for the car rental spot. Meanwhile, I'm on the air with you. I thought we were going to get arrested on air. It
was Kev, I got to go.
I gotta go, man.
Yeah, I gotta go. Like cops Steve are pulling me out of the car.
You know, then he gets up to the rental counter, and the woman's like, "Hello, gobble, gobble, gobble." Yeah. You know, just, I want a car.
I love it.
I want four wheels and a seat.
I love that we get that connection, and that's still a small piece of
I can't believe
local
that was
history.
Almost, that was like almost a decade ago, man. That's yeah,
long, long time
is,
ago. We're still doing this.
That is the stuff of lore.
Well, and speaking of stuff of lore, I gotta ask both of you: did you think that we'd be sitting here talking about the New England Patriots going to the Super Bowl, knowing that last year, usually teams that lose the Super Bowl aren't that successful making it in the playoffs or making that far in the playoffs?
Teams that make the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl aren't that successful the year after. This is why what we're witnessing is so remarkable. Enjoy every minute of this, people. If you're within the sound of our voice, understand that you need to embrace this, crack open the bone and suck out the marrow. Ask the Philadelphia Eagles, ask Seattle, ask Atlanta. Sure. Anybody that has been to it in recent memory does not get back, with the exception of this team that has been doubted, disparaged, slandered, libeled, called words you haven't heard in the Bible since this time last year.
It's amazing how consistently they've won. Literally unprecedented, not only in football, but in the history of sports. Mm. But can I tell you, when I looked at that, because we at Cold Hard Football Facts, we look at stats and data, and you and I have this conversation all the time, Jerry. Like, and I'm a fan too, but you wear your fandom on your sleeve, whereas I look at the numbers. But at the end of the day, the numbers come to the same conclusion you do. Right. So I would say, is Jerry an irrational Patriots homer, or is he a guy who's been right about the Patriots 80% of the time over the last 20 years?
I think the latter, yeah.
You know, you have. So my point is, but when you look at the numbers this year compared to last year, they weren't any different. They were a legit Super Bowl team. They just looked different. Right. They looked different, but the statistically, they were a very stout, powerful team. So I am surprised they went into Kansas City and beat the Chiefs the way they did. But I'm not. This is what they do. This is what they proved out is wrong.
And I try really hard in my writing, and I just had this conversation with my brother, because over the weekend I was getting clapped out on Twitter by people who say that I'm negative about the Patriots, and I kid you not, somebody called me a bandwagon fan.
And I
said, here's the thing. I have been laying down on the barbed wire of this franchise since I was in elementary school to let clowns like you step over my back. And I stop me when I'm wrong. I had some negative tweets when the defense was getting eviscerated a year ago September. I stand by every word I said, because I'm, like you said, Kerry, emotionally invested. And yet, I feel like, okay, I've been right every step of
you, you have, Jerry. Defending the wall was one of the, you were right the whole time, and people criticize you for that. But with that said, Belichick, they should be playing for 3 straight Super Bowls right now.
That's true.
3 straight wins. Was that the worst mistake of Belichick's career?
The Malcolm Butler thing?
The Malcolm Butler thing.
You know, last week, Daron Harmon, their starting safety, played 2 snaps. And they won. Nobody batted an eye. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if neither of you guys realized that Daron Harmon, their starting safety, played 2 snaps. It was game plan specific. Now, it looks bad when you bench a guy who had played a lot, but there's no part of me that says his reasoning was something other than what he said it was, which is what's in the best interest of the football team. It's what they thought
it's just like, if you look at, I'll go to the offensive side of the ball, okay? Yeah. You don't see necessarily this team game plans. And you may not, in 1 week, you may see a whole lot of James White and Julian Edelman. The next week, you may see Gronkowski targeted, and you may see Rex Burkhead, running the ball more so than you'll see Sonny Michel.
This week
that's
it's
just how they do
scheme.
It.
So that week it's jet sweeps and outside runs, and then the next week they're just chucking it.
I'm on the record that the Patriots dynasty is all about Brady. I think it's 90% Brady, 10% Belichick. Belichick had a 42% career winning percentage before Brady stepped on the field. With that said, the genius of Belichick is that
it's a combination.
Is that he doesn't elevate any player above the team. Like the Steelers are the best franchise of the Super Bowl era. Better than the Patriots. If you go back to Super Bowl era, okay? The Patriots are the best franchise of the last 20 years. But the Steelers do the same. They traditionally, like, they cut their linebackers, they don't get married to these guys. But they do fall in love in recent years with their celebrities in the Antonio, you know, these guys. Until this year, like Le'Veon Bell, they didn't overpay, but they feature guys. And the Patriots don't feature anybody. And so you don't know, like, who do you... Like, the Patriots knew they had to shut down Tariq Hill and Travis Kelce last week. And they shut him down. Gronk had more catches than those two guys, right?
Yep.
I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you're playing the Patriots, who do you shut down? Like, is Rex Burkhead? Rex Burkhead scored the final two touchdowns of the AFC title game.
Right.
And nobody saw it coming.
And there Sonny Michel had topped 100 yards rushing.
And I was going to say
He came off the field and you never saw him again.
And by the way, I'm forgetting his name. Sports Illustrated cover boy about 5 years ago scored four touchdowns against the Colts.
Jonas Gray.
Where's he today?
He's gone. He showed up late to a meeting that week.
They cut him loose.
And they picked up LeGarrette Blount and he became persona non grata.
The Patriots, Belichick and the organization knows. Well, our stats show that it's not about individuals running the, you know, ruling the day. It's about the team concept and efficiency and everyone pitching in. So you don't know, like, Gronkowski could catch 12 passes this week.
Right. Or he could be a third tackle and just block.
Exactly.
Which
he does. He does a tremendous job.
Yes. And I thought he struggled middle of the season with that, and clearly he was hurt. You'd see him extending his arms to make blocks, and guys were running through them. And I think what we know now is, it looks obvious to me, that those problems were temporary and not chronic.
While we have a moment here, I know that you promised to share something that's really going to completely blow our minds. Probably just mine, not Jerry's. Jerry will be like,
wait, what kind of weed did you bring? man, it's going to blow your mind, man.
Well, man.
Okashian ditch weed, bro.
We gave him some, too.
So a couple, you know, to Jerry's original point at the start of the segment, we are witnessing things that you've never seen in football, you'll never ever see again, but we've never seen in the history of North American sports. Winning almost 80% of your games. By the way, if the Patriots win the Super Bowl, Tom Brady's career winning percentage will have declined this season. And that's how much they've won. They'll have declined. So, two stats for you. If Peyton Manning, who has number two on the all-time wins list, Tom Brady's won 236 games, regular season and postseason. Peyton Manning's number two, 200 wins. If Peyton Manning came back to the NFL to match Tom Brady's win percentage, he would have to go 111-0 to match Tom Brady's win percentage.
You posted this. Something like,
The other thing, Tom Brady.
Which is interesting because he is the best of all time, Peyton Manning.
And the other thing, Tom Brady has more career wins than Hall of Fame pitchers Catfish Hunter, John Smoltz, and Pedro Martinez.
Wow. That's fantastic.
Postseason. Growing up forever, it was Joe Montana was the best winner in NFL history. You would be a fool to dispute that. He has 16 postseason wins in his career. If you subtract his win total from Tom Brady's win total, that leaves Brady at a paltry 13-10 in his postseason career.
Still better than Peyton Manning.
Right. And Brett Favre is in the Hall of Fame. He's 13-11.
My goodness.
Right. Brady, if you count,
it's disgusting how he's lapping the field of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of football.
41, and according to his interview with ESPN, zero chance of stepping down, retiring at the end of the year.
Right. And it's just
not to say that he won't be forced out of the building and chill that.
No.
If Bob allows it.
And trust me when I say this, and I'm really careful about this, like, not writing in such a way that I'm the guy with a foam number one finger on this thing going, woo, nothing they do is wrong. Like, I'm emotionally invested, and when things don't go right, it truly disheartens me and bothers me or whatever. And yet, this is ultimately the level of success that we're talking about, that if they followed what people have told them to do for the last 19 years,
they wouldn't be
successful.
None of
this would happen. Yeah. I'm going to write a thing tomorrow about how they're in the Super Bowl right now. Don't let that distract them from the fact that had they kept Jimmy Garoppolo, they wouldn't be in the Super Bowl. Period. End of discussion.
You've got your trilogy for your books. You should be writing your third book right now.
Hey, by the way, the negativity about the Patriots this year was not nationally. It was here in Boston.
Oh, huge.
It was nationally. The Patriots have transcended sports. They're a pop. Like, the image of them flying into Atlanta yesterday in their own plane. You know, the Rams are taking American Airlines to fly in their own, like,
35,000.
It's such a hard old move to fly in a plane.
35,000 people at Gillette.
And it's like 150 in a parking lot somewhere. Right,
all the shots from where the Rams play, the camera was, like, low on the ground. It's like I used to work in Cambridge Court when the nanny trial was going on, if I was after an old reference. And there were 12 loners just walking around in a circle trying to work up chants. But on the news, they put it down to, like, ankle level, so it looked like there was this throng of people. That's what they did for the Rams. Like, there has never been a more disparate difference between two fan bases in any major sporting event. Is that fair to say? Like, I mean, even the Jamaican bobsled team had a whole country behind them. But the Rams couldn't fill an Uber.
But what's funny, though, is I used the old the crocodile hunter with the knife, because there were two pictures that they had side by side. Somebody had tweeted.
Crocodile Dundee,
in the first movie, and just Patriots fans to Rams fans.
That's not enough. 100
people in a parking lot, that's not a rally. Nearly filling Gillette Stadium, now that's a rally.
So, with that, and that's all good, but with that said, nationally, the New England Boston Patriots fans do have a chip on their shoulder. It's over, dude. The national press, with notable exceptions, Rob Parker, Max Kellerman, Tom Brady's the greatest, Belichick's the greatest, Patriots the greatest. That's over. It was here in Boston where everyone was like, they're washed up, they're done. Sure. And I think that's where the chip on the shoulder this year comes from. Because you can, I mean, we all know these guys. We've all done work with them. They were crapping on the Patriots all year, like they're wall washed up. But nationally, that wasn't the story.
But you know,
they were being discounted locally.
But here's the thing: it all started in training camp because Tom wasn't going, and he wasn't doing the OTAs. It all started there, and there was this rift. You guys know.
I know. I would back it up even further, Kevin.
Really?
I would say, well, the Jimmy Garoppolo trade was, it's so shocking. Well, okay. Belichick was forced to.
You couldn't keep both of them.
January 4th, that Seth Wickersham hit piece comes out. Not Seth Wickersham's first hit piece against the Patriots, whatever. And the local media in particular bought it hook, line, and sinker. They swallowed that pill whole that everything in it was true. Okay, so many things. I was told about it ahead of time. I had a source saying, Jimmy Garoppolo was not only always welcome at TB12, he has a key card for it. Belichick never met with Roger Goodell. How do we know that? Roger Goodell's office said it. And let us not forget that one of Brady's major beefs, allegedly, was the Patriots never once made him the Patriot of the Week. Remember that? Like, an award that doesn't exist.
And
by the way, I hope if he wins the Super Bowl, let's pray that he gets the Patriot of the Week. Dear God in heaven, make it happen.
By the way, Tom Brady's the guy who ruined the Pro Bowl. Because remember in 01, 03, 04, I think it was 03, 04 when he was voting Pro Bowl quarterback, and he said, screw it, I'm not going.
Yeah.
I just won the Super Bowl. And literally, he, among his impact on the NFL, beyond just winning, he ruined the Pro Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point yesterday, they weren't even tackling.
No, they weren't tackling.
It was embarrassing.
Razzle dazzle.
But he's the one who made it not cool to go to the Pro Bowl.
Oh, yeah. Did you hear the story from
Patrick Mahomes?
Brandon Spikes?
Oh.
Said, 2012, I was really upset I didn't make the Pro Bowl. I thought I had a really good year. It was my third year in the league. And Brady said, what? Dude, we don't care about that. We don't care about the Super Bowl.
Right.
I mean, the Pro Bowl. Like, shut up about that stuff. And, like, imagine being Brandon Spikes, how small he must have felt.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw his chat roulette video. Making him feel small is no easy task. I've seen that man with a young lady.
You spent too much time on the internet, Jerry.
Yeah, but you got to do your work.
That was him as a rookie too. That didn't happen in Otto Graham's time.
Let's kind of talk about this game that's going to happen here. Sure. You're talking about Belichick being a genius, but you got this kid, Sean McVay. I could call him a kid because I think I have a kid who's a couple of years younger than him. and teaming up with Wade Phillips, who last time Wade Phillips had a chance with the Broncos, helped the Broncos to the Super Bowl, going against the Hoodie.
It's funny.
This is going to be a real chess match, is it?
It is, and it's amazing. So, first of all, Sean McVay is a phenom. I know I'm old when I'm 17 years older than the coach, the Super Bowl coach. Meanwhile, I think Wade Phillips' body was uncovered in an iceberg in Switzerland 20 years ago, and they, like, you know, brought him back to life.
By the way, boss move of him showing up in his dad Bum Phillips jacket. Kids,
and
if you're under the age of 55, Wikipedia Bum Phillips, you will not be disappointed.
Bum Phillips is the best, man. Oh, what a great personality. But so Wade Phillips is legit, real good defensive coordinator. I mean, he's the architect of those, you know, Broncos teams, right? That it kind of embarrassed the Patriots offense in the playoffs.
But they had a lot of key pieces.
But they had great, you know, Vaughn Miller.
Vaughn Miller by himself is a wrecking crew.
But there were a lot of great defenses that the Patriots, Tom Brady Patriots, have torn apart.
Mm. Yep.
And they found, for a couple games there, they found the formula. So if I'm, according to my numbers, this is the game that is most favorable for the Patriots among all in the playoffs.
Sure.
Like, I didn't think they would beat the Chiefs, especially on the road, based on my numbers, except for the Patriots' mystique, which is, I think, is what helped them win that game last week. But the Patriots should win this game statistically. But Wade Phillips, he does know how to defend Brady. And among all the defensive coordinators who get like Dick LeBeau, who's in the Hall of Fame for, like, three different reasons, could never stop Tom Brady.
Sure. Also, I mean, and I don't say this to discount anything Wade Phillips has done, because everything you said is legit. That Broncos defense was a wagon. They carried, you know, they were
the washed up remains of Tom Brady.
They were carrying the fettered corpse of Peyton Manning on their back.
Right.
But Vaughn Miller was incredible. That Patriots offensive line was in complete disarray. Brady, if I recall, was pressured more than any quarterback in any game of any import, more than since like 1970.
But that's secondary.
And still, they were a missed extra point away from going to the Super Bowl.
But that's secondary, though. I mean, I mean, the secondary helped that defensive line immensely.
Was incredible, and yeah, they all worked.
But then again, who was the offensive line coach for the Patriots then?
Dave DiGuglielmo.
And he just got fired recently, didn't
from
he?
The,
you know, it's funny, they did those couple years, they didn't have Dante Scarnecchia, they struggled.
Yeah, he retired, and they just talked him into unretirement.
Can I tell you?
Come back.
Yeah.
That game-winning touchdown against the Chiefs, did you watch the New England offensive line collapse?
Like
it was like watching Brockton High play, you know, Whitman Hansen in 1987.
And
they just collapsed the entire Chiefs defensive line.
Including my man, Jimmy Neckroll, James Devlin, who has been he immense
was a beast
all year long. Just depleting people and so on. And I think that's where the Patriots have an advantage. Is
will
that
they be able to run on the D-line?
I think. And if not, then it's going to be because Wade Phillips' defense sells out to stop the run, in which case the Patriots can do other things. That they can just morph this transformer offense. And I'm, of course, Autobots. They're not Decepticons, because screw them. They can do jet sweeps, and then all of a sudden they can hand it to Cordarrelle Patterson, but they can do checkdowns and play actions, and whatever you're doing to them, they can counter it.
If you want to make money in business, in, you know, investing, whatever, you zig when other people zag, right?
Mm-hmm.
You buy when others are selling, right? You buy real estate when it's low, right? You buy stocks when everyone's selling, right?
Sorry, but Potter's not selling. Potter's buying.
Exactly. That's exactly the line, you know?
Bedford Falls.
The Patriots have gone back to, like, the old Nebraska I-formation offense.
Sure.
And Devlin is killing people. He's killing people.
Yes.
And I forgot he was on the team that beat Seattle in 2014. I forgot he's been here this
long. Sure. Their record, Belichick's record in his Patriots career, when he has one rusher go for 100 yards, is 60-1. You'll have to go back to 2004. Remember that famous game where they went on the road to 2-11 Miami? And Corey Dillon had like 120 yards, but Brady threw four picks. A total outlier. But yeah, and it's happening. And Sony Michel, the rookie, has had 200-yard games. If he has 100 yards in the Super Bowl, God willing, he will. He'll be the first rookie ever to pull that off.
Well, let's talk. And again, we're speaking with Kerry J. Byrne, coldhardfootballfacts.com, and Jerry Thornton, writer for Barstool Sports, author of two fine books, Five Rings. And
you wrote two books?
Yeah, two books, man.
More than I read.
A lot has happened. from darkness to a dynasty. We talked a little bit about the Patriots. Let's and their offense. What about the Rams and their offense? I mean, is Todd Gurley going to be right for this game? He didn't seem like he was right against the Saints. What about Brandon Cooks?
What about his four catches for 10 yards? Four carries for 10 yards, rather, that made you think he wasn't up for that game? I don't know. He was
When you got to hand the rock to C.J. Anderson, something's wrong.
Yeah.
The guy you brought in a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting to see what... So the Patriots are masters of exploiting weaknesses, and especially defensively, how they take away... Last week, and I know... I think the Patriots, by the way, the first team in the history of football to give up 31 points in the second half and still win in the postseason.
No kidding.
I'm trying to confirm that.
I didn't remember that they gave up that
they
many
gave up
points.
31 points in the second half and still
Holy
won.
Holy smokes.
So anyway, but with that said... Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce were complete non-factors. So, who's going to be the non-factor? And so it comes down to, in Belichick's mind, how does the offense run? Like he said in the Super Bowl in 2001 against the Rams, the offense ran through Marshall Faulk, right?
And hit Marshall Faulk when he has the ball, hit him when he doesn't. NFL films.
So the question is, I don't know who that guy is on this offense. I don't. But Belichick probably does. Is it Cooper Kupp? You know? Is it Brandon Cooks? Yeah. But I think it comes down to it's Todd Gurley. It has to be.
Probably, yeah.
The guy he has to take away.
You know, maybe you could say C.J. Anderson, but institutionally,
which is the same thing,
I think certain teams have certain DNA encoded into them, and the Patriots have never been vulnerable, Kerry. Tell me, maybe you have the stats on this, but to that kind of enormous power runner. I mean, the patron saint of that kind of guy is Jerome Bettis, who never did bupkis against the Patriots. And I just feel like if you're that big, slow, tough guy, they will stop you.
But they'll let you run over them if you have a better weapon, because you don't win in the NFL. It drives me nuts when people say, establish a run. In the NFL game, if you average 5 yards per carry, you've had a great day. So
yeah,
let some running back run 40 times for 5 yards. He gets 200 yards. Who gives a crap? Because a quarterback who has a great day is going to pass for 500 yards.
Right.
I don't think their biggest concern is not, like it was with Marshall Faulk, it's not him running the ball, was him catching the ball. Right? So I think that would be their concern, because Gurley is a kind of a two-hole player in baseball, right? So
can I ask you guys a question? This is a missing ingredient to the Super Bowl.
Buffalo wings.
No.
Janet Jackson's nipple.
No. Oh. Controversy.
Good answer.
We still never saw the other one.
You had Deflategate. No Gronk. Brady cutting his hand last year. I mean, we really,
Malcolm Butler being benched, whatever.
We have no real
controversy. Well, we might have gotten a gift today from the guy who should have been the GOAT of the last game but was let off the hook by the officials. That is Nickel... Roby Coleman. Jeez, that's a hard name to say. Who came out today, came out swinging, and said, time is catching up with Tom Brady. I hate the Patriots. I hate them, hate them, hate them. He gave them the bulletin board fodder that, to go back a ways, Freddie Mitchell gave them in 2004. You know, Anthony
Someone
Smith
always gives them that material. It's insane.
I know. Like, just check your file.
Who was the defensive back for the Steelers a couple years ago before the AFC title
there game? Anthony Smith in 2007 said, I guarantee they're going to win.
No,
and the Patriots targeted him, and Brady went right up in his grill mix in the end zone while
2007?
The fans yelled, guarantee, guarantee. And, like, just these coaches that they don't have the ability to rein these guys in, which tells me a couple things about this Rams team, that whether they win or lose, I think this is a team that you will never hear from again. They've loaded up on the salary cap for this year, and it's clear that these guys love the sound of their own voices.
I disagree, Jerry. I think Sean McVay is a legit coach. NFL is all about management, leadership. I think they'll be back.
Okay, so this is the time. We got a couple of minutes left here. You gentlemen, give your picks here. We'll start with Jerry. Jerry, how do you see this game going?
I like the Patriots to be able to put up a lot of points, and I've said that for 8 other Super Bowls, but, you know, I like them 34-24.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
MVP will be?
Yeah, I think.
You think you'll be right?
Yeah, it's going to be.
The Patriots over their last 20 postseason games are 15-5. Not only that, they've scored 31.3 points per game in the postseason, which would be one of the 25 top scoring offenses in the history of football. And they've done it in the postseason. I didn't like their chances against the Chiefs. I think this is a 34-20 Patriots win.
See, here's the thing: is they've all been nail biters.
Oh, absolutely.
All these teams have been nail biters.
They need something you all can sit back. Been,
remember the days when the Super Bowl used to be a blowout? Like, by the third quarter, you'd be like talking during the game. Hey, would you put in this dip? And then the commercial would be on. It was like, shh, quiet, quiet. The Dalmatians making friends with the Clydesdale.
The Patriots do not get enough credit for making the Super Bowl competitive again, because everyone they've been in has been a nail biter. Yeah, and for 20 years, they were blowouts.
They could be 8-0. They could be 0-8. They could be 7-1 exactly. Or 1-7. So, they're 5-3.
I think it's pretty interesting. You know, we expected last year for Nick Foles to poop his pants and not be able to perform in the moment, and he did. I don't see a repeated. I don't see Goff being able to repeat what Foles did last year. I think that they're gonna be on him early and often. I mean, Flores is already he's already licking his lips to be the next head coach in Miami. So you're gonna see some defense. I think it's gonna be 24-17. I think the Patriots.
Wow, are kind of a defensive battle by this day and age.
I think so. Yeah.
All right.
So, guys, I got to thank you for coming in.
Oh, what a blast.
Fun as always. Anything? Last question. Does Gronk retire? Is he done at 29 as a Patriot?
I feel less that's a yes than I did a few weeks ago, just because, again, he's starting to look like maybe what was bugging him is not this chronic thing.
Mm.
If they win, it probably increases the chances, but it looked to me like he's having fun, and he doesn't mind if he's blocking or if they've got him outside the numbers.
Beast.
As Tony Romo screaming for them to get
been
the ball.
Just based on it, if I were him, I'd retire. Yep. Go do something else, make a lot of money. Save
WWE, can I be a featured?
I mean, how many porn stars can you... You know, have sex with
those. Lots of porn stars. Can we just rule out Hollywood, though?
Yeah.
Like, I've seen this guy in commercials and stuff. He's not Daniel Day-Lewis, okay?
Neither Jim Brown wasn't Daniel Day-Lewis either.
That, right. Then again, I saw Jean-Claude Van Damme in Sudden Death a couple of weeks ago, and I said, oh boy, Gronk could do this badly. Yeah.
I actually think that he'll retire and come back in the XFL.
Hot take
right there.
You heard it here first, everybody.
He can wrestle part-time and catch footballs part-time just for Vince McMahon. He'll do that. That's all the time we got here. We'll find... I know.
Can we keep talking off the air?
You sure can. We are going to say goodbye, but until next week at 6:15 p.m., you've been listening to Monday Night Talk. Good night.
Live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. WATD FM Marshfield, WATD Brockton.